space to rent in this town. You're out of luck. And the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. And you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return.
Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters radio show with me, Neil De Silva. It's Monday, it's the 22nd of July 2019. I hope you all are keeping very well and you all had a great weekend. On today's show, we are going to be having a chat about metabolic syndrome. Now, it's a condition that a few people maybe have heard of, but perhaps don't properly understand. So we'll be discussing the causes and how maybe we can help ourselves to avoid it. We'll also be talking towards the end of the show about blood pressure. Now, on on last week's show, we spoke about high blood pressure, and today we are going to be talking about low blood pressure. And in the middle, we have today's special guest interview with Helen Evans from Heavens Therapy. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning, Neil.
It's great to have you on the show this morning.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
And we're going to find out more about what Helen does and how she can help you in about 20 minutes or so. So a quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, if you search The Health Matters Radio Show, you can like the show's Facebook page. You'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. And also, the show has an iTunes podcast. So again, go to iTunes, search The Health Matters Radio Show, and you can catch up on this show and all previous shows there too. So a quick disclaimer before we start. The purpose of the show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate and inform you in ways that you could improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice and the content of the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional first, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 or speaking with your local pharmacist. All the content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion. And I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. Okay, so, metabolic syndrome, what is it, how does it start, and what can we do to avoid it? Now, some of you probably heard about metabolic syndrome. Essentially, metabolic syndrome is a collection of disorders. Okay, so it's not one particular thing, it's a collection of common ailments and common diseases that we face today. So these include high blood pressure, obesity, high cholesterol, and insulin resistance. Now, when you combine these two together, it's quite a potent cocktail of disorders and extremely damaging to the body. And one of the most insidious things is these symptoms can go undiagnosed for a long time. Now, for those of you that know me, you'll know that my specialism is type 2 diabetes, and you'll also know that type 2 can go undetected for up to 10 years. And equally, high blood pressure, high cholesterol can really do a lot of damage before they're actually diagnosed. And together, these increase the risk of things like stroke, heart disease, and other really serious illnesses. So people that have metabolic syndrome are actually have twice the risk of a heart attack or stroke, and they have five times the risk of developing type 2 diabetes than people without the condition. And the really scary thing is, actually, in this country, it's estimated that around a third of adults either are diagnosed or have metabolic syndrome and don't realise it, that a third of people. Now, there's a big link between, obviously, the rise of obesity, particularly in the UK over the last 20 years, and the rise of things like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and type 2 diabetes. But this is also affecting children and adolescents now. And actually, this condition was generally regarded as the sort of the middle-aged person's disease, you know, because you didn't really get high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or type 2 diabetes years ago until you got into your 30s, 40s and above. But now children are being diagnosed with it. So that's quite a scary thought. Now, some of these areas we can't control. So genetics can play a part in metabolic syndrome. And also age as well comes into it. But there are things that we can control. And this is the point, is like type 2 diabetes, like high blood pressure, like high cholesterol, you have some control over the risk that you put yourself at for actually developing these conditions. So things like how much you weigh, your diet, your lifestyle, your exercise levels, these are all things that are within your control. So if you are overweight, if you've got a poor diet, if you are very inactive, then these are things that you really need to get to grips with to reduce the risk of things like developing metabolic syndrome. So if you've got a larger waistline, this is called abdominal obesity. And this is excess fat in the stomach area, often known as visceral fat. Now, if you've got a high level of visceral fat, then that puts you at a greater risk of things like heart disease, but also it also increases the risk of other illnesses, for example, type 2 diabetes. If you've got triglycerides, now triglycerides are a type of fat found in the blood alongside cholesterol, or if you're on medication to treat high triglycerides, you are at risk. If you've got a low HDL, so HDL is the good cholesterol, and it's called good because it helps remove the excess bad cholesterol, the LDL cholesterol from your arteries. If you've got low HDL, that can put you at risk. And equally, if you've got high LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, you can also be at risk as well. If you've got high blood pressure, now blood pressure, we'll cover blood pressure towards the end of the show in relation to low blood pressure. But if you've got high blood pressure, that can do a lot of damage to the heart, and that can put the heart under a lot of pressure. And if you've got high blood sugars, or specifically high fasting blood sugars, because actually when we eat, our blood sugars do increase. But if you've got high fasting blood sugars, then obviously that is a symptom of type 2 diabetes. And again, type 2 diabetes is a factor in metabolic syndrome. So if you go to your doctors and you've got one of these conditions, then obviously they will deal with that one particular condition. If you've got a number of the conditions, then obviously it's a doctor's judgment as to whether you have metabolic syndrome or not. But generally speaking, if you've got three or more of these risk factors, so for example, if you've got high cholesterol, you're overweight and you're type 2 diabetic, then generally speaking, it can be considered that you could have metabolic syndrome. And again, metabolic syndrome leads on to other serious things. There's a big link between that and also dementia as well. But the big thing is heart attack and stroke. It really does raise the risk of those conditions. So if you've got metabolic syndrome or you have got any of its components, you can take control, okay? You can start eating properly. You can lose some weight, particularly fat around the belly. Or you can start to exercise more under, obviously, supervision. So if you are at risk of these particular conditions, this perfect storm of all these different conditions that contribute to metabolic syndrome, then please do take control over it. Now, as I mentioned, a lot of these conditions go undiagnosed for a long time. But the one thing that is visible is the large waist circumference. So even if you are of an okay weight, but you've got a lot of fat around the belly, you've got a big waistline, but the rest of you isn't particularly fat, that can be a symptom of having this fat around the organs. And it's the fat around the organs that is particularly dangerous. But also, if you if you start to recognise other issues like frequent thirst or going to the toilet a lot, or fatigue or blurred vision, that can be a symptom of undiagnosed type 2. So again, it might be time to have a chat with your doctor. And, you know, if you are worried, you know, I'm not doing a diagnosis here with you. I'm just saying that if you are concerned, it's better to actually talk to your GP and either have it confirmed and have it dealt with or have it ruled out. Then that's the thing to do. And insulin resistance is a huge problem. It's estimated that we've got between 4 and 5 million type 2 diabetics in this country, with another 600,000 that have it and don't yet know they've got it because it's not actually been diagnosed, and another 12 million people that, if they don't change their lifestyle in the next 10 years, are going to also have type 2 diabetes. And again, type 2 diabetes is a big contributor to metabolic syndrome, so it is a huge problem. And the other risk factors to consider, we mentioned age. You know, as you get older, your risk of metabolic syndrome does increase. Ethnicity comes into it. So Hispanics, particularly Hispanic women, seem to be at greater risk of developing metabolic syndrome. Obesity, now we've covered that, but, you know, I will mention it again. Carrying too much weight, particularly too much weight around the belly, around the abdomen, does increase your risk of metabolic syndrome. Type 2 diabetes, if you've got that, you are at higher risk, because type 2 diabetes, even the medication to deal with type 2 diabetes, can raise cholesterol. So that puts you at greater risk of metabolic syndrome. And if you've ever had non-alcoholic fatty liver disease or polycystic ovary syndrome or even sleep apnea, they can put you at higher risk of metabolic syndrome. But like I say, it's not all doom and gloom. You can prevent it. If you've got it, you can deal with it. And you can also reduce the risk as well. So any change in lifestyle should be a lifelong commitment. It shouldn't be just a fad, because fads don't last and the disease will come back. So it's a lifelong commitment to a healthy lifestyle. So lose the weight, start eating proper food, stop eating high sugar and high calorie and low nutrient processed foods, because that can help to reduce blood sugars. And it can also improve cholesterol levels as well as helping with weight loss. Exercise, again, if you're not used to exercise, please do it under guidance and speak to a specialist first. But exercise from 30 to 60 minutes a day can really help to reduce blood glucose, and it can improve cholesterol levels. If you're a smoker, reducing smoking or stopping smoking, stopping smoking is good anyway for so many reasons, but it also helps to reduce the risk of metabolic syndrome, and it can help reduce the risk of things like heart attack and stroke as well. And stress comes into it. If you are a stressy person, then look at methods of stress management, because stress has been linked to other conditions like weight gain and also high blood pressure and type 2 diabetes, and then they can in turn lead on to metabolic syndrome. So you can see how all these things are connected. And the worrying thing is metabolic syndrome is becoming more common, because there's been an associated risk or a rise in obesity among adults and children, particularly in the UK. So it is a big problem. If you can recognise any of those symptoms, maybe talk to your doctor. They may decide to give you medicine, some pharmaceutical intervention. Equally, they may just give you some good advice with lifestyle or dietary changes. And as always, if you want to get hold of me, you can do that through my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. If you'd like to have a chat about things like high blood pressure and losing weight or type 2 diabetes, drop me a line via my website and we'll go from there. So after the break, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Helen. But before that, we have a classic from Aha. You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show on Monday, the 22nd of July, 2019. I'm Neil De Silva, and I hope you're all keeping very well today. A quick reminder of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, it's at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, if you go to Facebook and search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can follow the show's Facebook page and you can like the page and share my posts. You'll be able to listen again to this show and all previous shows on the media page of my website or on iTunes podcast. Just go to iTunes and search the Health Matters Radio Show. And if you'd like to contact me away from social media privately, then please do so via my website. Go to the contact page of www.i-nutrition.co.uk. Okay, so on to our special guest interview of this morning. We have today Helen Evans from Heavens Therapy.
That's correct.
Helen will explain more about that in a moment because it's not the normal spelling of Heavens. And we're going to find out more about what Helen does and how she got into dealing with her particular field of health and well-being. So good morning, Helen. It's great to have you on the show this morning.
Good morning, Neil. It's lovely to be here.
And I'm really looking forward to finding out more about what you do and also having a really good chat about hypnotherapy. And we're going to bust some myths and we're going to tell you what hypnotherapy is and equally what it isn't. So, Helen, let's start at the beginning. Give us a bit of background. How did you get into doing what you are currently doing?
Well, a few years ago, I mean, we're going back about probably 7 years, a friend of mine embarked on sort of some training in NLP. And those of you who don't know what NLP stands for, it's neuro-linguistic programming. And she needed some case studies and she asked me if I wouldn't mind helping her out. And so I duly did, like any good friend would. And I found it really beneficial and that really spurred my interest. So I actually decided from that point that I quite fancy doing the training myself. So I embarked on my NLP practitioner training, which is where I started.
Mm-hmm.
And after which I sort of like, I did that actually whilst I was still working. So I did it in my part time.
Okay.
And from that point onwards, I bolted on sort of doing the NLP for children because I wanted to be able to help kids also from the age of 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took the humongous big step to like leave my job and go out into the world as a therapist, which was pretty daunting. And I did that about 6 years ago, actually.
Okay.
But I decided I wanted to sort of be able to offer more for my clients. And so I found out about hypnotherapy and started with the foundation course and then moved on and did the clinical diploma. So I've been probably in business now about 5 years doing all of this.
And how's it been?
It's had its ups and downs. I mean,
a bit of a roller coaster?
Absolutely. As any therapist in business will tell you, because we are essentially self-employed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's building your business up, it's building the clientele, it's getting yourself known. And that comes with all sorts of, like, you know, trials and tribulations.
Oh, yes. Some very high highs and a few low lows.
Absolutely.
I think anyone out there that is self-employed, runs their own business, particularly in the health and well-being arena, will realise that, yeah, it is certainly a bit of a roller coaster. We'll come back to NLP in a moment, but you mentioned about doing these case studies while you were working. Your background has been in sort of health care-based industries, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Neil. I sort of, most of my working life, I've sort of spent working for big corporate companies to start with. So I worked sort of like in the healthcare profession for companies like AXA, Benetton mm-hmm. Healthcare, mainly in sort of like, you know, office-based roles.
Yeah.
And I've done that on and off up until a few years ago when I actually started working in a school. And I was working there sort of as a cover supervisor, sort of dealing with the classroom side of things, helping the teachers out. And that also kind of got me thinking about my choice of career and what I'm doing now, because I've often found myself sort of levitating towards coaching, mentoring, supporting roles. Ended up in sort of supervisory positions where I was helping train and what have you. And I sort of thought, well, if I'm kind of enjoy doing that and I get such an immense sort of like, you know, feeling of reward from it, why don't I do it as a career? Which is kind of where it sort of spurred me on to moving into this direction.
So it's kind of that sort of passion of helping people, perhaps problem solving.
That's right, yes. I mean, in the school, it was like helping the students overcome worries they might have to do with exams and just general anxieties that teenagers have.
Yeah.
And I really, really found it very rewarding. So, yes, I decided to just take the plunge and get out there, get qualified and start doing it.
Fantastic. So let's go back to NLP. Perhaps you could explain a little bit more about what NLP is.
So as I mentioned earlier, NLP stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. It's not dissimilar or too dissimilar from cognitive behavioural therapy, which many people may have heard of actually, or CBT. But the therapy was created by Richard Bandler and Milton Erickson many, many years ago, back in the 60s. And their work founded the basis of NLP today, and it was the study of how the brain processes information and the powerful effects that language patterns have on the brain. So there's loads of techniques and tools that I personally use that are NLP-based, and I use them in my therapeutic practice. But you may have heard of people such as Richard Bandler, possibly, but more commonly Darren Brown, and maybe even Tony Robbins. I mean, they are all NLP users and they use it like all the time. So they're quite famously known.
I'd be surprised if there's any business owners out there that have never heard of Tony Robbins.
Absolutely.
And if you've never heard of Tony Robbins, Google the guy because it will change your life.
Absolutely. He is one of the biggest, like, you know, stars that I know of.
So you said that you've been running your business now for about 5 years?
That's right.
So it takes us back to, what, 2013, 2014?
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
Okay, so what happened then? When you got your qualifications, where did you think you would go with your business from there? What was your first mission when you got your qualifications?
I guess you have these sort of like starry-eyed notions that you're going to be qualified and that suddenly like
the world is your oyster.
Clients are just going to swarm.
You'll be beating people away with a stick.
Absolutely. In reality, however, it takes a lot of commitment, a lot of hard work.
Yep.
Because aside from obviously like deciding what you're going to call yourself, I mean, that's a minefield in itself, isn't it? And then, of course, you've got all of the necessary stuff around that, business cards, you name it. Finding premises, that's another thing. And then really just kind of starting to get yourself known. So promoting yourself, whether that's via social media or whether you go to networking groups or what have you, there's different ways in which to sort of like try and get yourself known.
Get the word out there.
Absolutely. I can remember like with my first client, I was very anxious because obviously they don't know that they might be my first client. But, of course, you're still a professional. I mean, you've been doing it a while by then, even during, like, your training. But you are nervous. And once you've kind of, like, you know, had that baptism, you're just keen then to just move forward and have more of that.
And there is, you're quite right, there is this expectation when you go off and do your own thing that, you know, there'll be a queue of people waiting to work. And if you're lucky, I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I've known one or two people that have been in the right place at the right time. But for the rest of us mere mortals, it can be quite disconcerting, can't it? And lots of people, lots of good people that I've known that are really good at what they do, in my opinion, have quit too early because it was hard. It's not an easy thing to do, particularly in our industry. In the health and wellbeing industry, there's lots of noise.
Yes.
There's lots of people, because it's quite unregulated, I would say very unregulated, actually.
Yes.
There's lots of people that aren't qualified, lots of people that do part-time courses and then try and pass themselves off as being qualified. So being, not only do you have that challenge of trying to get yourself new clients, you're also trying to cut through all the noise as well.
That's very true, Neil. I mean, I've noticed even myself, like there's lots of courses on offer. You can, like, believe it or not, do all these sorts of things online. You can go off for a weekend and then suddenly like have a certificate in any number of different well-being kind of trades or and it in a way it's really quite worrying that there are, as you say, unregulated people out there who profess to sort of be able to give you, whether it's hypnotherapy or whatever, and they haven't actually undergone all of the training and, like, you know, have the safeguards in place, and they're not governed by the code of ethics and not regulated by the actually authority bodies such as myself. It is worrying, actually.
I guess without being drawn into the politics of it, when it's probably indicative of our society where we care more about our finances. You know, the finance industry is hugely regulated, and yet the health industry isn't. And, I guess when you look at it from that point of view, you think, you know, you've got to be qualified and regulated to be a financial advisor, but you don't have to be qualified or regulated to deal with someone's health. And,
yeah,
I'd argue that probably needs to change. But
well, I mean, certainly with the bodies that I'm governed by, you are. You are regulated.
Yeah.
And the nice thing is that anybody who seeks help, whether it's for NLP or whether it's for hypnotherapy, can actually go onto the website, whether it's the ANLP for the Association of Neurolinguistic Professionals, or whether it's like the General Hypnotherapy Register or the National Hypnotherapy Society, and you can actually find on there someone who works near you who is qualified and has got proper accreditation and qualifications. And I would urge anyone who's like looking for therapeutic help to always do a bit of research beforehand and make sure that who they're going to see is somebody who's actually
definitely
done the work, put in the hours.
I agree. So let's fast forward up to the current day. So you're now offering, as well as NLP, but you're offering hypnotherapy as well.
That's right.
Perhaps you could tell us a little bit more about what hypnotherapy is, and also bust some myths as to what hypnotherapy isn't.
Of course. Well, what I'd like listeners to realise is that there is a huge difference between the type of hypnosis that they might see on stage, which is the entertainment type, or even what's perhaps been on the television more recently. And that is not clinical hypnotherapy. There's a big difference. That is for entertainment purposes.
Absolutely. And I think one of the biggest culprits, and I give them credit because it is very funny, but is Little Britain.
Absolutely.
Kenny Craig.
Yeah.
Whenever someone mentions hypnosis, you kind of think of, you know, look into my eyes.
That's right.
And actually, that's very much, I would say even that's taken the entertainment side of hypnosis to the extreme, isn't it?
Very much so. I mean, what you see entertainment-wise, you have to take into consideration that they have actually chosen the most suggestible individuals in the audience. Mm. And these are people who naturally have lower inhibitions than maybe the next person, which means that in truth, if they're the kind of people, if you were out on a good night out with them and they'd had a few drinks, they're the kind who'd get up on the dance on the table anyway.
Yeah.
They'd do a dare if you gave them a dare.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It doesn't take a lot to coerce them into clucking like a chicken on stage or eating an onion and thinking it's an orange or something like that. So these people are often the most suggestible, and that is for entertainment purposes. Yep. What I do, however, is the therapeutic application of hypnotherapy, which is clinical and specifically to help with mental health disorders and everything from anxiety to stress to if you've got confidence issues, phobias, if you've got any problems like weight management and even giving up smoking, things like that. Those are the sort of applications where hypnotherapy can quite obviously help, where maybe willpower alone doesn't, because it kind of enables you to make positive and lasting changes. And a typical hypnotherapy session, just to sort of make your listeners aware, the client normally discusses their reason for coming to see me, what they want to achieve. We usually have a good chat about, like, you know, a bit of background, their medical history, general lifestyle and health questions, so that I can actually help with them to sort of choose the best approach for them. And that might be hypnotherapy on its own, it might be NLP on its own, it might be a combination of both, but we work then together to bring about the change that the client wants.
Fantastic. So can you give we're not going to hypnotize people on air, but can you give kind of an example of how you sort of tap into that subconscious?
Well, with hypnotherapy, it's actually where it focuses the mind. So if I were to say to you, Neil, and to your listeners, to think about freshly cut grass, for example. Now, as soon as you start thinking about freshly cut grass, some people might see it and others might actually smell that distinct smell of freshly cut grass. And that's because of how our minds work, because our senses are the foundation under which all of our memories are stored. And that's how we sort of like, you know, all of our sort of unconscious beliefs and our behavioural learned patterns throughout our lives are all stored in our unconscious. So during a hypnotherapy session, whilst the client is in what we call like a trance state, but it's actually a natural state of really deep relaxation and very heightened mental awareness, hypnosis feels a little bit like daydreaming. And a lot of us know what it's like to kind of like take a bit of mental time out when you're just kind of zone off. And it takes maybe two or three times to call your name before you actually sort of like pay attention again. It's that really channeled focus of attention. And we deal with the unconscious mind. And that's actually where it's really powerful too, because we're able to sort of help people to sort of recode and rejig their experiences, perceptions, and maybe even like where they've laid down negative or limiting memories and change those so that they can then, how they perceive it actually, but then they can actually then have new associations that no longer cause that negative reaction for whatever they came to see me about.
Powerful. And I think it's worth reiterating that this is not mind control. This
isn't.
This is not making you to do things that you would normally do.
Goodness me! You know. If I could make people do things, then I wouldn't need to run a business now, would I?
I could rule the world.
Yes, the potential is unlimited, isn't it? If I could make people do things just like that.
But I think it's obviously drawing that distinction between what people traditionally see as the entertainment side.
Yes,
And also drawing that distinction between that and the therapeutic side of hypnotherapy. You know, hypnosis on stage is for fun, often at the expense of the individual. And obviously, the therapeutic side is more to help that person with whatever they've got. You know, you mentioned about smoking, anxiety, stress.
That's right.
You know, perhaps even low mood, or you know, if you've got
depression.
Teenagers that are worried about exams.
Definitely, yes. Or if you're looking to take a driving test and you've got exam nerves, anything like that. If you're really anxious about, I don't know, going to the dentist, not only can hypnotherapy help with the anxiety side of things, but it can also, I mean, there are quite a few studies out there where people have had extractions done under hypnotherapy.
Wow. It just goes to show how powerful the mind is.
It is, yes.
And equally how little we know about it.
That's very true. I mean, hypnotherapy's been around for a very long time, actually. It's been around since, and the therapeutic use, actually, hypnosis has been recognised by the British Medical Association since 1955. So it's been around for a hell of a long time.
Yeah, excellent. So in addition to dealing with those conditions that I mentioned a moment ago, you have a specialism.
I do. Yes, Neil. I specifically like to help people who have issues around thyroid disorders. I mean, I myself suffer with an underactive thyroid and have done since I've been in my sort of like mid to late 20s. And there are a number of associated like symptoms that go with thyroid disorders, whether it's underactive or overactive. But I see a lot of clients who are suffering with like, you know, low self-esteem, anxiety, often depression, They have, like, whether it's skin disorders, their hair's thinning, they've put on loads of weight,
mm-hmm.
And they're struggling with that. But it does just have this overall very sort of debilitating effect on the system, especially when your levels are not quite adequately treated.
Mm.
So whether or not you're not yet been diagnosed, or whether or not you're in the early stages of having to take perhaps thyroxine, you find that, you know, your mood and everything, because it's a hormone, it completely messes everything up.
Yeah.
So, yes, I do help a lot of people who come and see me. Quite often they'll come and see me with one of the other things I've mentioned, like anxiety, stress, or what have you, and then I find out that they have a thyroid condition.
Yeah.
And often we'll sort of explore that and make sure that everything is as it should be there before we sort of go.
And it's interesting because I guess in some of those cases, the anxiety and the stress, perhaps the individual hadn't even connected it to the thyroid.
No, that's true. That's true.
Because obviously thyroid is a physical thing. Anxiety and stress are mental things.
That's right.
But the two are, I would say, in more cases than not, whatever the mental health issues are and the physical health issues, more often than not, those two are interwoven and connected at some point.
Very much so.
Mm.
I mean, often the reason why I have, like, the initial consultation with my clients is to sort of gain some medical and health background, is to kind of see whether or not there are any possible sort of, like, you know, medical underlying explanations for why they might be coming to see me, and make sure those are ruled out.
Yeah.
Before we move on.
So what successes have you had with clients? Obviously, be very careful about anyone you mention individually. Mm. Only mention people with their permission. But generally speaking, can you give me some case studies where you've helped people with particular issues?
Well, there's quite a few to choose from.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose some of my greatest successes has been helping a client to overcome their fear of heights. They were going to be going off on a skiing holiday where they'd be using a ski lift. And it was one of these, like, you know, fantastic opportunities to go on a holiday, but they were, like, really scared of heights. So it was just so great to be able to help them overcome that so that they'd be able to fully enjoy their holiday.
It kind of makes me chuckle thinking someone would book a skiing holiday if they're scared of heights. But obviously they booked the skiing holiday with the view to conquering their fear of heights. I would guess, or suddenly booked it and then thought, oh, got to go up a mountain.
Exactly. Sometimes that can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, another client of mine came to see me, and their issue was around food. So they actually had, well, almost a phobic response, but high anxiety over salad and salad vegetables and what have you. So any time that they had to go to a restaurant or anything, it filled them with a sense of dread, because often, as you well know, your meal will come out and they always put little like, you know, sort of complimentary salad on the plate and all that. Well, that was a big no-no for this client.
Wow.
It just absolutely filled them with dread. So I was able to help them not only overcome that, but actually go on to start trying new foods, peppers and salad bits and pieces.
So foods actually, that they would never have dreamt about.
That's right. Wow. Wow. So that's no longer an issue for them. So I helped one lady who was getting married, and she was getting married outdoors.
Okay.
And she had a phobia of bees. So you can imagine, you know, she was going to be get married at a lovely time of year, wedding dress and everything. The last thing you want is to be, like, you know, having a flap about bees, especially when you're trying to have wedding photos and stuff done.
And I guess the point there is that this isn't a, how can I put it, a healthy fear about getting stung. A phobia completely is the other end of the spectrum.
Absolutely,
isn't it?
Yes.
It can be debilitating.
It's gone from what is, like, because it's okay to have a fear of things.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing.
A fear of heights.
Absolutely. I mean, that is like looking after your well-being.
Yes.
After all,
yeah.
You don't want to fall.
Yeah.
Equally, you know that bees and wasps can sting.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows that. So it's absolutely natural to be wary.
Yeah.
But it's when that becomes so extreme that you won't go outdoors at summertime or you won't go near flowers because, you know, bees and wasps are near flowers.
Yeah, yeah.
It then starts really, like, confining your life.
Yeah, it has a big
limit,
impact.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Limit how you lead your life and the things that you do. That's the point at which my clients come and see me, is when their life has kind of shut down so much that they are really not enjoying life at all because of it.
And then I guess that then spills, or that can spill out to things like, you know, severe anxiety.
Absolutely.
Which then could lead on to depression, and you can see how it could start to snowball into something
very much.
Very serious.
Very much. So I'm always very proud of the clients who decide to take matters into their hands and they decide, you know what, I've had enough of living like this.
Yeah.
I want to do something about it.
Brilliant.
And those are my ideal clients, the ones who come and see me, who are really committed to the process, who really want to see a change in their life, and they're sort of already kind of halfway there because they want it.
And I think, you know, it's like anything, the first step to making change is to realise that you can make a change.
Absolutely.
Or that you need to make a change. And then from that, seeking out the person or persons to actually help you to make that change.
Yeah, this is true.
Which is where you come in.
It's true. I mean, this lady in particular, I mean, to the most part, she was able to sort of avoid situations where maybe she'd come into contact with bees and wasps. Mm-hmm. She wouldn't sit outside, even restaurant times and what have you and stuff like that. But a wedding, her wedding, very significant event.
Mm-hmm.
And often it is something pivotal like that that makes them realise that I really have to take control of this and do something about it. I've let it interfere for too long.
Yeah. Wow. So what are your plans for the rest of this year and into 2020?
Well, apart from continuing to expand my clientele, I've taken on a new treatment room in Tenterden, Kent. So I'm there every Tuesday afternoon, and this is my newest night venture, really. So I'm sort of trying to get myself known in the area, plus doing sort of a bit boring stuff, I suppose, but doing ongoing training and CPD, which is necessary for like many of my accreditations and what have you, just to sort of maintain my knowledge and skills and to sort of take on new ones as well. As far as the thyroid disorder side of things are going, I am hoping very much to be able to, in the future, offer some thyroid awareness sessions.
Okay.
Because it's not just the poor individuals who suffer with the condition. People generally speaking, closest to them and everything, aren't aware of how it impacts them and how they might be able to support their loved ones or their friends and what have you.
I think it's very powerful.
Yeah.
Definitely. So just to reiterate one more time, what sorts of clients, people, are you looking for? People with what particular conditions?
Well, luckily, I can help with quite a wide range of issues. However, I tend to see an awful lot of people with anxiety, with stress. Anger issues is another one, actually. Things like road rage. Issues around confidence and low self-esteem. Phobias is another one of my staples, actually. I see a lot of people with phobias. People with like low mood and depression, whether it's children or adults, if you've got test or exam worries, if you want to give up smoking, if you want to take control of your weight, I can help you with that. And even with pain, hypnotherapy can help you to manage conditions like fibromyalgia, for example, and IBS. It's very well known to be able to help those areas.
And you can work with children as well as adults?
I can, yes, from the age of 7 upwards.
Okay.
So.
And I know that you're DBS checked and you've got all various...
That's right, yes. I mean, I'm registered with, I think I might have mentioned, but I'm registered with bodies like the General Hypnotherapy Register, National Hypnotherapy Society, the CNHC, which is the Complementary and Natural Healthcare Council. I am like fully insured, DBS checked. So you can actually go onto these websites, the ANLP I mentioned earlier, and check my credentials.
So people have that peace of mind.
Absolutely. And they know that, you know, if they come to me, that they're going to actually sort of get a professional service. They're going to be seeing somebody who's like, you know, fully accredited, fully qualified. And yes, I mean, I just want the best possible outcome for those who are courageous enough to step forward and do something about their issues and come and see me. And I will in turn then give them a completely tailored and professional therapy session.
Brilliant. So if people do want to get a hold of you, what's the first port of call?
Well, you don't need a GP referral to come and see me. That's good news.
Mm-hmm.
And although sometimes I do ask them to get a letter from the GP, especially for certain medical conditions, but I would tell them that at the initial consultation. But the easiest way of getting hold of me is to either phone me or to email me, and they can do this like through my website with all my details on there.
Mm-hmm.
Our website is www.heavenstherapy.co.uk, and Heavens is as in my name. My first initial is H for Helen.
Mm-hmm.
My surname is Evans, E-V-A-N-S. So Heavens is actually combination of my first initial and my surname, so it's heavenstherapy.co.uk, or you can look me up on Facebook at heavenstherapy. I'm also on Twitter and LinkedIn as well.
Brilliant. It's been really interesting. Thank you for coming on the show this morning, Helen. It's been really good to find out more about what you, not just about what you do, but also the journey that's taken you there, and also about how you can help people. It's been really great. Thank
you. It's been really lovely being here. Thank you very much for allowing me to be on your show.
Thank you, Helen. Okay, so for the next couple of minutes, I'm going to talk about blood pressure. Now, I will cover this in more detail on next week's show. But when we talk about blood pressure, most people associate blood pressure issues with high blood pressure, and quite rightly so as well. As I mentioned in the piece about metabolic syndrome, high blood pressure, along with high cholesterol and high blood sugars, often go undetected for a long, long time before they are picked up, either because someone starts getting symptoms or because it's picked up as part of a other tests that are being done for another medical condition. So when our high blood pressure goes undiagnosed for a long time, it causes a lot of stress, particularly on the really small capillary blood vessels within the body, you know, in the eyes and the kidneys in particular. But that can lead on to other conditions as well. But for a moment, I'm just going to talk about low blood pressure. So high blood pressure is hypertension, and low blood pressure is hypotension. So hypo is always too low, and hyper is always too high. Now, if you've got low blood pressure, that might be actually normal for you, and you can function particularly well on blood pressure that maybe would be too low for someone else. So if you're young, if you're uber fit, you might have quite low blood pressure. But equally, low blood pressure can be caused by medical conditions if you're not used to it. It can be caused through medication, and it can have a bit of an impact on your life. There's no recognised cutoff level for low blood pressure as there is for high blood pressure. So if you've got a systolic, which if you remember from last week's show is the higher number, a systolic really should be between 110 and 140, but some people function perfectly well on a systolic of 90. Because they're young, they're healthy, they exercise a lot. But if your blood pressure drops down too much and you start having some symptoms, then it's time to start getting help. Now, we are at the end of this week's show. So what we'll do is I'll carry this piece across to next week's show. And it's quite an important piece, because I do get people talk to me about low blood pressure and lightheadedness when they stand up, or intermittent dizziness. So we're going to cover that on next week's show. We're going to look at the three different types of low blood pressure. And we're going to look at some of the things that can cause low blood pressure aside from medication. So we'll carry that across to next week's show. Please tune in on the 29th of July. All it leaves me to do is to thank Helen again for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Neil.
And as I mentioned, this show and all the previous shows will be available on the iTunes podcast. Go to iTunes and search a Health Matters radio show, or on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. If you'd like to get a hold of me away from social media, please do so via the contact page of my website. But please do follow the show's Twitter feed and the show's Facebook page. Like them and follow them, and you'll be kept up to date with all of the progress from the show. And equally, if you're out there and you are in the health and wellbeing industry and you'd like to come on the show to, for a future show, as Helen has today, to just talk about what you do and how you got into doing what you do and how you help people, then please drop me a line via my website and we'll see about getting you on to a future show. So after the last song, we have the Channel Radio News and Weather. Until the same time next week, have a great week ahead. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I'll catch you next Monday.
The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. Traffic is stuck and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful clearing the sea out. See the bedroom fires up.